Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Underground, After Dark Edition, so to speak. So, like you guys have probably seen on social media, I have decided to put together kind of a question and answer session that hopefully will serve to answer some of your questions that you might have for me out there. And I thought I would start by getting back into the swing of doing these with radios, communication stuff. So, this first question and answer session is going to be kind of a dual purpose because today is Thursday and it is GhostNet night. So I've got a couple of things going on here in the background and we'll see how it goes. So just off screen, I have my laptop here, my typical Windows tablet here running JS8 call, and that is hooked to my talk in a box sort of setup that's in the other room. I don't have an antenna strung up in here, and I've got kind of a hasty setup in the next room over where it's a little bit easier to access. So this is what I'm going with for now. I'm going to kind of keep this off screen a little bit because it's got some, you know, kind of sensitive information on it. But over here in the corner, I've got another laptop going with JS8 call as well, but this is purely my receiver. So this is running with a web SDR. I can show you which one. It's actually the web SDR in Pennsylvania, so K3FEF. Just a standard SDR. I've shown you how to use this quite a bit already. This is exactly the setup from the free JS8 call video that I've got that I put out quite a while ago. So this is what we're going to do. This receiver is kind of at the edge of my receiving range. So I've got my receiver here, which is my localized antenna, my local transceiver, my local radio here. But I also have this set up just so that I can kind of extend my range a little bit and see what is out there. I did not announce this ahead of time that I would be kind of showing what comes in through the GhostNet in real time, more or less, because I wanted it to be kind of natural and organic and, you know, see what's going on. If I had solicited this and said, hey, I'm going to be recording during the GhostNet session, so if you've got news reports, push them out, well, people would do that and you wouldn't really get a good feel for how these normally go. So this may be a total failure, maybe a good success. Who knows? We're going to give it a shot anyway. So since this is probably going to be fairly boring, just watching me look at JS8 call messages as they come in, I thought I would also take the opportunity to answer some questions that you guys have. So I am already several hours ahead of time. I actually just checked the clock and I'm actually quite early for the JS8 call net. So I'll just casually kind of check things out and see what's going on and see what we get coming in over the wires. I of course have my GhostNet plan. If you don't know what that is, I have a whole slew of content out there explaining what the GhostNet is and how it all works. So let's just go ahead and get started here. You know, in retrospect, I should probably do these as a live stream, and I may end up doing those again, but I don't know about you guys. What do you guys think? I mean, I think, you know, sometimes live streams, especially when it comes to, like, radio stuff, yeah, you know, it tends to be like, you know, I can talk for a long time, and I don't want to sit here and talk for 2 or 3 hours and just bore you guys to death about this stuff. So maybe by cutting out some of the chunks of time where it's not super, super interesting, we can kind of be a little bit more effective. I don't know, though. If you guys want live streams, I'll start doing them again. But for now, I thought this might be a good way to get started again. So I, of course, got I've solicited the questions from many different platforms. So I'll just go ahead and start with those of you who contributed on Patreon, and we'll see what you guys have. So quite a few of you have some very, very in-depth questions, so let's go ahead and dive right in. So on Patreon, Andrew asks, hi S2, I've been watching a lot of Tech Prepper, that's great, and yourself on comms. I'm a fast learner generally, but I find setting up a Linux machine a huge and frustrating time drain that doesn't seem realistic for most. Yeah, I guess so. Do you see there being a relevant privacy benefit in using Linux over a Windows system for running COM software, or do you see the differences as a material since the primary purpose of the COM system will not involve internet connectivity? Good question. I know your portable talk system runs on Windows. Is this to your satisfaction? Have you considered Linux? Reasons why not employed? Any particular privacy protections implemented in your Windows setup? Thanks for your excellent work to date. All right, Andrew, getting us started really nicely with a very in-depth question. The answer is the reason why I don't use Linux, and I do sometimes. Okay, so right to start with, I did use a Raspberry Pi setup. I got started Kind of along the sort of along the same lines as Julian OH8STN on YouTube kind of has a lot of Raspberry Pi setups, and from a while back, that's kind of how I got started. However, really the reason why I don't use Linux is because I'm stupid and it takes me a while to learn how to use Linux, and two, I find that it's the software's problem. So when it comes to ham radio software specifically, a lot of it just has a very, very hard time working on Linux. And I know the Linux guys say, no, that's not true. Well, you know, in my experience, because I'm not a software engineer, I find that I have fewer errors on Windows when it comes to ham radio software. I would prefer Linux because, as you mentioned, you know, I'm really not a big fan of Bill Gates, just in case you didn't know, and really anything that Windows or Microsoft in general stands for. So, you know, same thing with Apple. I prefer Linux because, you know, for privacy concerns, because it's just a, you know, a more open and, you know, I just better all around operating system, but I'm too stupid to figure out how to get it to work with ham radio sometimes. So this is really kind of, you know, lowest common denominator, right? And when I say there are errors, I mean, like, how should I word this? Like, you get your stuff, you get all your radio gear together, you get out into the woods, you put your antenna up, you get your radio up, you get everything, and then something doesn't work. Like, there's always something with Linux. Like, maybe it's just me, but it's like, okay, why is JS8 call not talking to this? Why is, you know, this not working with that? And then, you know, we're trying to a lot of times use some proprietary software where there is no Linux version. So now you're talking about using like some kind of emulator or shell or something to get this stuff to work. And it's like, I do not have time for this out in the woods. So yeah, that's really kind of one of the main concerns that I have, is just Windows just works better with ham radio software. Now, I sincerely hope that the ham radio world catches up and starts working on some better stuff. Now, I know that the Tech Prepper is working on the MCOM tools thing, and I'm really excited to see what that is when it comes out, when it's all ready to go. But for now, you know, I've got to use JS8 call, I've got to use WinLink begrudgingly, and Windows is kind of a pain, but it's the least painful solution. So, again, yeah, security is a huge, huge problem, right? Like, you know, I'm kind of the mind with technology, you know, maybe this is just kind of like an old archaic way of thinking, but I'm of the mind where I did not code it, I did not develop it, I did not write the lines of code myself, and I am not smart enough, even though software is open source a lot of times, I'm not smart enough to go in there and go line by line and say, oh, this line of code is some kind of backdoor. That's just not me, right? We all know how the whole VPN thing worked out. The VPN scandal from a few years ago, you guys remember that? Where it turns out people were doing reviews of VPNs. And it turns out that the people who were doing those reviews of VPNs and the companies they worked for were just either fictitious outright, or they were directly paid by the VPN person. So these so-called third-party reviews of products and software, like, I don't trust that. Like, you know, I just don't. So, when it comes to security on Windows, you can just do the best you can, you know. And really, air gapping is preferred for me. Now, I don't do that as much as I should, and it's one of those things where, unless it's air gapped totally, you're gonna have vulnerabilities, right? So, air gapping is kind of one of those things where either you're connected to a network or you're not. You can't just, like, connect to a network and then do a bunch of stuff. No, you've got to, like, you know, stay either on or off the network. That's just kind of how it works. So if you're you, I will say this, though, you know, coming from a complete non-expert, non-software engineer, it is a very, very bad idea to run older software systems that are connected to a network. So, for instance, I do have a couple of Panasonics that are running Windows 8, and that has depreciated so much. There's so many vulnerabilities. I don't think it's supported anymore. So, if you're running a very ancient system, you absolutely have to air gap that, because there's vulnerabilities that just can't be patched, or they're not being patched. So, that's a pretty big concern. But yeah, if you can run Linux, that's anything's better than Windows, really. But I'm just kind of stuck on it right now, for the time being. So, hopefully that kind of answers that question. So, moving on to a very different question entirely, we have Dan who asks, in yesterday's Wire report, you mentioned a baseline increase in U.S. STRATCOM activity based on HFGCS radio activity. Can you explain these terms and maybe how we in the field can make similar observations? Great question. So the HFGCS, I mentioned it in some of, good grief, I can't remember which video I specifically mentioned it in, but it's in the SIGINT playlist if you want to go check that out. I think it's the basic SIGINT. HFGCS is the High Frequency Global Communication System, basically the radio network that U.S. STRATCOM uses to communicate with resources and assets out in the world, basically to prepare for World War III. So, remember the movie Crimson Tide, where Gene Hackman and Denzel Washington are arguing over this EAM, right? Well, EAMs, Emergency Action Messages, they get sent over the HFGCS a lot of times. It's a really, really complicated system, but the short version is what we can do in the open source intelligence world is look at the HFGCS and basically count the letters in an EAM. So EAMs, any kind of like burst radio traffic, anything, even things like Sky King messages. Man, this is a whole rabbit hole. Stay out of the rabbit hole. Really, we can monitor a lot of the U.S. Air Force's communications when it comes to nuclear weapons, believe it or not. It kind of makes sense if you think about it. It's all encrypted, so we can't decrypt anything, of course, and it's all code words, right? So what we can do, though, is we can listen to the Air Force's transmissions and listen to see maybe who they're talking to. So the HFGCS, there's some, you know, Air Force officer, technician, or whatever, sitting at one of the transmitting locations. They will fire off a message to an aircraft that is circling around somewhere in the world. The aircraft will pick it up and will retransmit it or send a different message or so to submarines that are down underwater. So this is one way the HFGCS works. There's other many ways as well. Think of kind of like Dr. Strangelove, remember? You know, where Slim Pickens gets up in there and is working with the radio stuff about how the recall, and then there's authentication codes. That's very close to what's really done in real life. And the HFGCS is the radio transmitting communication system that handles all of that. So what does this mean for us, right? We can't decrypt it, so what does it mean? Well, basically, we have a list of frequencies that the HFGCS uses, the Air Force uses for the HFGCS. And we can monitor these, and if we notice that there is a sudden burst of traffic, we know something is going on. We don't know what. That's very, very important. We don't know what, because I've seen some news agencies claiming, oh my gosh, the HFGCS is active, World War III has started, they're gonna nuke us all, oh my god. No, no. Almost never. As a matter of fact, it has never happened yet. Every single time we have seen an HFGCS, like, boost of traffic, it has been due to training. So usually it means there's a training exercise, and right now there actually is a training exercise going on. It's kind of a continuation of a later one. So that's what this is all about. So the HFGCS can be an indicator for, hey, something's wrong in the world, okay? But only if it's combined with other things, because guess what? The Russians, those wily Ruskies, they have one too. We call it the bear net. They use the bear net, which is a term we have given it. They have their own very long acronym term for it. But we use that as well to figure out where they're at. So for this war in Ukraine, a lot of people were tracking the bear net because they were using their bear bombers to launch cruise missiles into Ukraine. So as soon as somebody saw the bear net's active and they said, oh no, there's a lot of aircraft in the air, they knew missiles were incoming within an hour or two. So this is one of those things where it is an indicator of the end of mankind, but only when combined with other things. So if the HFGCS is hopping and there's a lot of messages flying back and forth We can't see what they are, but we can't decrypt them. That is, we can see, you know, what type of message they are generally. There's a lot of messages being sent. Also, this is a one-way system, by the way. It's, you know, it's not two-way. There's other parts of the system that make it two-way. But anyway, if the HFGCS is active and the Baronet is active and the Chinese are active, something's going on, right? And that's when you're going to start seeing me type out a wire report saying, fellas, something's going on. I don't know what it is, but something's going on. So that's what the HFGCS is and why it matters. Again, please do not get caught up in it, because there are drills on this system like every week or every month or so. And four or five major exercises once a year, so, or four or five times a year. So when people they don't know what they're talking about, they're just like reading my wire reports or reading some other people's, and they're putting it in their own news reports, and, you know, they don't know what they're doing, so they don't know what this means. They look at it and they say, oh, good grief. The U.S. government is sending messages to, you know, nuclear submarines practicing launch, sending launch codes, you know, nuclear launch codes. Well, yeah, they do this all the time, and that's the whole point. The entire point of the system is to make an exercise look like war and to make war look like an exercise. They're not, that's the whole point, right? It's nuclear deterrence, mutually assured destruction. This goes back to Grand Strategy 101, right? So the point is that you're never really going to know if the HFGCS being super active is meaning that World War III is about to start in a few hours. Like, you're never really going to know that unless there are other indicators stacking up behind it that kind of help indicate that as well. So hopefully that answers that on the HFGCS. Maybe I should have a more in-depth video on that one. I don't know. We'll have to see about it. It's a real deep rabbit hole you can go down. And for me, like, it's fascinating. It's very interesting. But at the end of the day, it's not that useful. It's an indicator. It's not proof. Remember that. It's an indicator. It's not proof. So, moving on, let's see here. Steven asks, as someone relatively new to JSA call, I know that my biggest and most persistent concern has been whether or not I'm being heard. Yes, so I'd wager most novices are probably tinkering with their comms outside of their scheduled ghost net windows. Yes, okay. Okay, let me skim through here. Oh, okay, he wants to set up like a test group. Yeah, I might do that. I might actually do that. I've been thinking about adding in 10 meters, the 10 meter system for technicians, people who don't have general, they just have their tech license. I have to read up on that. I'm not entirely certain if that would work super well. If I were to do that, I'd have to have a video on it. Let me think about that. Yeah, I think I might do that. As for now, for those of you who are trying to test your gear, like, I already see some people. See, I've got a couple of heartbeats coming in. I've got a lot more on my antenna here because, for whatever reason, my local antenna is doing really well tonight. It's never this good. Anyway, a test group would be good. But I think that you could just use a normal GhostNet tag, you know, at GhostNet. Make sure you're following the tags, right, guys? Like, make sure. That's the whole point of the system. Where am I at here? Pull it up in my handy-dandy notebook. See here, GhostNet, North America. Boom. I don't know if you guys can see that or not. Question, yes, no. All of this stuff right here. Read that. It's important. There are tags you can follow so that you can get an alert when people are talking about GhostNet. Otherwise, you're just going to get garbage and garbled messages through. You don't have to do this, I don't suppose, but I would very strongly recommend it because it's how you know you're getting messages across, and it helps you people helps people break out by locality. So you can follow at GhostNet in JSA call, and anytime someone sends a message to at GhostNet, you will get pinged, right? And here's the cool part. You can send messages. So you can literally send a DM, a directed message, to at GhostNet, and whoever hears that message will store it. And you're sending messages to people whose call sign you don't know. Is that not cool or what? Exactly, right? So that's what this is for. You can also do it by state. A lot of people break this down by state, and they're able to follow the at GhostNet main tag, at GST Flash. That's your World War III one, right? That's the one that I'm going to be using if, you know, missiles are in the air kind of thing, like in an emergency traffic kind of thing. And then at GN, then your country three-letter, state two-letter. That is for localized communications. So hopefully that will help break things out, because on JSA call, hundreds of people can be talking all at the same time on this waterfall, and things can get pretty busy. So you want to be able to get pinged when you've got localized traffic coming in. So yeah, I think I will have to create another at something test group and just kind of put it in here. But for now, until I can get the latest update going, the next update, we're on, what are we on? Version 1.4 right now. 1.5 is going to be pretty big, I think. Just cause I got a lot of pages to add to it. But anyway, yeah, hopefully that answers that one. Yeah, somebody else mentions here, PSK Reporter, PSKReporter.info, I think. PSK Reporter is, one of the main tools you can have to make sure that you're see how far you're transmitting. So you can go into pskreporter.info. I'm fairly certain that's the URL. I'm sure someone will correct me. And you can put your call sign in and click, you know, select JSA call on this band. You can do all bands or whatever. And it will show you on a map all of the people that heard you. Of course, this requires those receiving people to upload this information to, you know, PSK Reporter's web servers. So if they're using an air gap system like me, you're not gonna get that information. You're just gonna have to get stuck here with what you got. But yeah, that's really good. Also, SNR requests. Do an SNR request on GhostNet, preferably before the window and before the comm window, and you'll be able to see who can hear you and who can transmit back and forth. So that's a good way to do that. All right, next one. This is from DJ Rabbit. S2, what can I do to start networking with people in a preparedness mindset? As you have mentioned fairly recently, not everyone has friendly neighbors, and many don't have peers next door who know how to use a radio or don't want to learn it. Here I am surrounded by both, with some who believe that, quote, if we got to prepare that much, then they're just going to nuke us. So there's no point in preparing because we'll die anyways. I want to find people I can work and prepare and train with. Great question. I'm sorry I don't have a great answer for you. This is, for those of you who want a little peek behind the curtain, this is officially the longest episode that I have been writing. I've been writing this episode to talk about building community for 6 years. I have it here in my notes, a draft that goes back 6 years. Because every time I get close to publishing it, I realize I don't know what I'm talking about. So, it's kind of unfortunate, and I think the solutions that I have come up with over the past few years that seem to be like my own worldview, I don't think is shared by very many people. I think it really goes back to us having to wait literally until a new generation comes around, before mass organization to help, you know, build a good society is going to be possible. That's a super, super pessimistic outlook, isn't it? So I don't want to say all is lost when it comes to building community, because there's certainly the laundry list of things to do, isn't there? All the people that get on, you know, YouTube or the internet and say, oh, you want to build your community? Here's how to do it. Here's the magic keys to the castle. Here's the solution to everything. All right, cool. What do they say? They say, all right, get involved in your community, take classes, take courses, get involved in your kid's school, go to church, get involved in your church activities. That's actually a pretty good one. It's not available for everyone, but that is a good solution. But you know, all the things they tell you to do, you know, start volunteering. Well, you know, sometimes there's just not that many people around, and it seems like even in rural America, we're having some hard times trying to get people to care about their local area. So, again, I don't want to be super pessimistic, and I don't want to brush the question off because it's very, very important. I just don't have an answer for you. I can tell you what everybody says do, but I myself am living proof that, you know, it hasn't really worked super well. So, you know, even though you do everything right, sometimes you're just in kind of like a personnel desert, you know, a lot of times, and it doesn't really work out super well. Hopefully we can come up with some solutions, not just the GhostNet stuff. Oh, look, by the way, somebody's sent something. What was that? Heartbeats. Yeah, quite a few heartbeats. I've got here on my local stuff here, my personal antenna, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 people, and we're like 3 hours early. So that's pretty good. Pretty good. You know, keep expectations realistic, right? But yeah, building community, man, is a hard one. It is really a hard one. And, you know, I'm afraid that when I flip this, you know, camera on and I just start ranting and raving to the world, that I'm just going to sound like, you know, like really negative. And I don't mean to, you know, because this isn't a discussion, really. This is just kind of like a one-way thing, you know, a lot of times. And it's hard to get across what I mean in a video sometimes without sounding like super, super pessimistic. But yeah, it is a challenge, isn't it? It really is. It really is. But there'll be more on that later. I'll figure out some way. I'll figure something out. I'm working on it. Maybe we got to get at it indirectly. Maybe this GhostNet is kind of helping us with that. I don't know. We'll come back to that though. All right. Let's see what we got here. One more question from Patreon here. Let's see. Hello, S2. Oh, this is from Frank. Hello, S2. I followed today's North America to Europe data bridge test. Good. From a web SDR located in Europe. And I received multiple GhostNet transmissions from 3 different GhostNet participants in the United States. Okay, let's see. He's got call signs here. So K9DGY in Illinois, KK4QIG in Florida, and WB5VAI in New York City. All these are thousands of miles away. So I would like to know how many watts they were transmitting and what kind of antenna they were using, if it's possible to ask them. So yeah, if you guys are watching and that's your call sign, you know, hey, hop in the comments. Let this guy know. Let Frank know what you were using. Because when you're on WebSDR, you can't really ask him, can you? It's kind of a one-way thing. You can, I should say, for anyone out there concerned, you can put their... can you do that? I don't know if you can. You can go into PSK Reporter and you can put your own call sign in. I know this. You can put your own call sign in and then click people, click the little bubbles, little like timer bubbles, and it will tell you the info of their station. So normally, if you're able to transmit, you can ping these people and hit them with an info request, and whatever they have put in JS8 calls. So let me go ahead and just, I actually open it up for you. Settings. This is, again, this is not my real call sign. This is just a receiver, so I don't have to worry about any of that. So let me go to general. Yeah, so you can put your station info in here. Mine's blank because it's just a template, and I can't transmit from this, obviously. This one I do, and I don't think I have anything listed. But if they have something listed, if they have their info listed, a lot of people will tell what their station info is. So there's the info and then there's station on JS8 call if you can transmit. So sorry about the guys who are just receive only for now. You're not going to really know what they were using, but let me see here. Let me look at this again here. Okay, whatever. It depends on what antenna you were, what web SDR you were using, because some are better than others. So let's see. It also depends on what transmissions you were using, because heartbeats sometimes go further than regular messages. So, Illinois, Florida, New York City, all East Coast stuff. So, I mean, it depends on the time of day. They could, I mean, I can hit the Canary Islands regularly. Not any time I want. I have to actually wait for the window to open to get over there on 20 meters. Let's see. Oh, that's actually a second question. Yeah, my second question is, why not use 20 meters as the main ghost net frequency? See, I'm on the West Coast, and I'm missing most of the East Coast traffic on 40 meters, but 20 meters seems to cover the entire U.S., even at 10 to 20 watts. Thanks again for getting this all set up, Frank. Well, I've got the answer for you, Frank. I've got the answer for you. One word, skip. So this is something that gets left out of HF radio a lot. The skip range. So imagine your station in the middle of this circle here, okay? So this is a huge problem when it comes to trying to get radio stuff set up, because 20 meters, you're absolutely right. You can talk a long way on 20 meters, but you probably can't talk very locally. So what happens is say this is the ground, okay, and your station is here. Well, what happens is your transmission comes off of your radio and radiates away, right? And it goes up into the ionosphere where it comes back down to Earth. Well, see, the thing is that it doesn't entirely do that one time. It does it several times sometimes. So the skip range is a magic circle where where people cannot hear you locally. So you'll have a really tiny circle around you to where someone who's maybe a mile away can hear your 20 meter message. But somebody like 3 miles away from you to like 20 or 50 or sometimes 100 miles away from you, they're not going to hear you at all, because your message propagated away from you. And it's kind of like, think about it like a water hose pointed up, right? Well, this is why we're trying to use 40 meters, because if you have your antenna set up in an NVIS, you know, near vertical incident sky wave kind of arrangement, what you're doing is you're sending your signal directly up as best you can so that it can be reflected directly back down. Well, you can't really do that with 20 meters. You can, but really you can't. So 40 meters is that happy medium to where if you have your antenna set up, you can talk to somebody a mile away from you or 300 miles away from you. But you can't really go any much further than that on a low power setting. You absolutely can, but all things being equal, generally that's the way it is. Whereas 20 meters, usually most people on 20 meters are using vertical antennas. So the takeoff angle of that signal, it's gonna leave that antenna like this, and it's gonna go up into the atmosphere, and all the people that are over here, they're not going to hear you. So that's why you'll see people talk about skip range a lot with 20 meters, because, and you can test this yourself. You can absolutely test this yourself. You can find an antenna, like a WebSDR antenna, that and punch it into 20 meters, and you can see, you probably won't see very many stations close to that antenna. You maybe have 300 miles away from that antenna, and that's the closest you're going to get. So on 20 meters, generally speaking, again, this is all debatable, but generally speaking, on 20 meters, you're going to be talking long range, because the takeoff angle for that signal and the takeoff angle of how most people have their antennas strung up is going to make it so that it goes away from the antenna up to the ionosphere and then back down 3,000 or 4,000 miles away. But anybody closer, like over here, they're not gonna see it. So that's why we can't use 20 meters is skip range. That's really it. I would like to find a way to integrate it more, but 20 and 40 meters is basically, that's basically where we're at for now. So yeah, hopefully that answers your question. Skip range, that's why we can't use 20 meters all the time. Otherwise, you know, ask yourself, well, why can't we just use the longest range system every time? Well, there's trade-offs. You know, you want to talk far or talk close. And that's what you got to choose. So, just looking over here again. Sorry if I'm being super spastic today. I had too much coffee throughout the day today. But got a little bit of interference coming through on that WebSDR. I can see it partially here, so it must be pretty substantial. But yeah, some people coming in. Somebody talking about, there is no way that person is coming in from Sydney. There is no way. Maybe somebody was talking about something else. Who knows? I got a lot more on my local antenna for some reason. Pennsylvania not doing so hot tonight. But yeah, I'm not quite sure what's going on with my local stuff. So yeah, just got a few people here and there. Heartbeats pinging back and forth. I like to let it run for quite a bit, like several hours before the window, just so that I can see who's out there in my software here can get start to build this list over here. We can so that we can start to see who's actually out there and who might be able to hear me. So that's what I like to do. All right, let me go ahead and jump around here a little bit. All right, so just moving on here with some of the questions. Let me check Gab really quick. I do have a Gab account for you, those of you who don't like Twitter or whatever. It's not super great, but I am on Gab. That's genuinely me. Yeah, it's not a very strange things on Gab. Very strange things indeed. Anyway, first question here. This is from Phil. Since all the FamilyNet type radios are built in China, may we assume if they are ever used as intended by many, then the Chinese have break-in, control, override, and location ability built in already? That's a good question. I'm not really concerned about it, but that is a good question. Really, how should I answer that? There's always the concern with any piece of tech that there's some kind of backdoor entry, right? There's some kind of secret backdoor that, you know, can be taken advantage of by a international agency or the Chinese or whoever, right? That's a good concern. There's not much I can do about it. I have long suspected that HF radios probably have a backdoor in them that probably can receive a message over HF and brick themselves. It's just my wild conspiracy theory with no evidence to support it whatsoever. But I have a theory. I have that theory. And I, it kind of makes me hesitant to say it out loud like that because I have no evidence. But it would make sense, you know, if, you know, Chinese or Japanese with the help of, say, maybe some American agencies, right? It would make sense for somebody to walk into Yaesu's factory and wherever, flash a badge and say, hey, put this code in your radio so that, you know, we can burst out a message one day over the emergency alert broadcast system and brick all ham radios. Now, that's a crazy conspiracy theory as far as, you know, reality. I will admit that is not, I mean, I have no evidence to prove it. I have no evidence to disprove it. I can answer your question on the location thing, though. If you want to make sure that there's no location concern, make sure you're not being tracked through your Baofeng, crack the case open and look for a GPS chip. Yep, GPS chips are really easy to find on the motherboard, and they got to be there, right? They're not going to be really tiny. They're going to be fairly large. Every radio that I've bought, if they have a GPS capability, it's a selling point, right? So they're going to put that in there. But it's only a receiver. With some of the more software-defined radios that are coming out, it may be more of a concern, but you know what? It's like one of those things where, you know, if I'm that concerned about it, then I don't think we have any wiggle room to work with. So we just kind of have to do the best we can. And if, you know, if doomsday comes and the missiles are in the air, right? And, you know, we got Armageddon coming down. And it turns out that there's this been elaborate conspiracy to brick radios. And my radio gets bricked and this, you know, this GhostNet plan here is worthless. Well, you know, I can't really do much about it at that point. And I don't see any alternative solution other than building your own radio with your own software. Sorry, I can't do that. I would like to, but I can't. I can't right now. Not that smart. So this is a concern, I guess. How much of a concern? Not hardly a concern at all. Something that I'm thinking about in the very, very, very back echelons of my mind, but not right now. Sorry if that's not really a super great answer, but it's kind of what I've got. Let's see here. So continuing on here, Chadre, sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. I enjoyed your video on Talk in a Box. How would you adapt that to a vehicle command center like a Toyota 4Runner? It probably wouldn't change very much.
because the talk is basically built around HF radio. And as far as I know, there are not a whole lot of ways of getting in an HF antenna for 40 meters and 20 meters in a whip. Could you do it? Yeah, it'd have to be a loaded coil system using the vehicle itself as a counterpoise. I could do that. I don't have a Toyota 4Runner, but I might have to look into that. Yeah, that's really just kind of like a check mark for me for later. So sorry if I don't have a good answer for you, but right now it wouldn't change very much for me because I got to string up 60 feet of wire anyway. So no real big change. It's basically be the same thing. Maybe integrating UHF, VHF more, adding in maybe a CB radio for people that are into that sort of thing. Probably just adding in more because I'd have the engine of the vehicle to be able to generate power so I could run a more powerful radio for sure. Yeah, that's probably what I would do. But I have to think about it. I'll think about it and get back to you on that one. So let's see here. That's it for Gab. Let me move over to the Twitter. Good grief. Lots of questions. Okay, let's see here. Let's work them in order here. All right. So Alex asks, great work you provide. You often discuss close-range comms for local teams. What about longer-range HF for international comms and teams? Thank you. Yeah, that's what we're doing. This is all HF. This is all HF stuff. So, yeah. HF's good. HF is great. Okay, Brian asks, comms is great. Intel analysis techniques are great. It would be good to hear about building a tribe. Yeah, you tell me. It would also be good to hear about plugging your tribe into your community. Yeah. Yeah, it would, wouldn't it? Yeah. Yeah. I wish I had a solution for this. I feel like some parts of my career, basically, have you ever heard, let me ask you this, have you ever heard, don't bring up a problem, don't discuss a problem, don't bring it up, don't complain about anything unless you have a solution. Have you ever heard of that, been taught that before? It's kind of like, I don't know if it's a military thing, I definitely heard it in the military an awful lot, but I kind of understand the sentiment behind that. Like, you don't want to needlessly complain, right? You don't want to just sit there and just continue moaning about a problem, right? If you don't have a solution to fix it, quit moaning about it. Well, I feel like people use that a lot of times to say, don't talk about problems. Well, that's ridiculous, right? We've got to talk about these problems or else we're never going to fix them. So, we can, not dwell on it, but we got to bring it up in the first place. And I can tell you, man, we've got some problems with community in this country, around the world, too. It seems like less so around the world, but here in this country, man, good grief. I don't know if you have noticed or not, but we're living in an unholy land, aren't we? In many ways, for sure. A lot of crazy people out there. A lot of people that are crazy and need help. A lot of people that are crazy and need help and don't want it. A lot of people who don't know they're crazy. That's probably me, to be honest. Anyway, yeah, I wish I had a good answer for the tribe building thing because people ask about it all the time. I have been working on it for years and I have not come to a good, succinct, solid solution for that. So I'm terribly, terribly sorry about it. Cool. Somebody just did a message check. I must have not caught the first part of that, but somebody requested. Okay, they may be actually transmitting here. Hang on, give it a second. No, it's just somebody checking in. Somebody said they're talking to each other. Somebody did a message query. Message queries are great because if someone has stored a message for you on their system, then you can exchange it and get it across. The only problem with the message system, and maybe I'm just too stupid to realize why JS8 call did it that way, but anytime you send a message, check to the network, everyone who does not have a message will send the word no, and it just absolutely floors the entire system. So that is, kind of a problem. And it's kind of a headache because you just get a bunch of like 15 or 16 stations at the same time saying no, you know, all over the waterfall, and it's kind of frustrating. So, yeah, that's kind of one of the downsides of sending messages on JS8 call. So, yeah. All right, let's moving on here to, looks like an anonymous username on Twitter, is VARAC. It's VARAC. Being considered as a mode for GhostNet. So many good things about it. Yes. VARA is a, what is it? How do I describe this? It is a modem, basically. It is a way of compressing information into a format that is much more efficient, staying within the bounds of what the FCC says is okay for us to use. So VARAC is, let me see, do I have it in here? I hope I do. Yeah, so Winlink peer-to-peer using VARA. The problem I have with VARA is that it's paid. It costs you a lot of money. It costs you, I think, last time I checked, $70 for a license for VARA. VARA HF and VARA FM. And VARA AC is like the chat client. So it's not a replacement for JS8 call, but it's like a, good grief, what is it? It's like a blend between JS8 call and RIDI and Winlink, kind of compressed into one. I like it. I really do like it. The license thing, I don't think you need a license for VAR AC. I'd have to check that, actually. But when it comes to using VARA on HF, man, it is so much faster to send an email than with something like RDOP. RDOP is great because it's open source, but VAR AC or VARA, man, that is so much better. So, yeah, somebody's sending a turbo message. Let's see here. They didn't get the first message, so they're saying again. Yeah, turbo on JS8 call is great. I love turbo mode, but it really sometimes drops an awful lot of characters. That's just due to the nature of it. So, yeah, let's see. Moving on down here, past some comments. I would love a... Okay, here we go. Vile, I'm not sure if that's a pseudonym or a proper name that I'm mispronouncing. Sorry about that. I would love a piece on how the wire is produced, the structure, and how multiple countries could report these. Let me expand it. How would they be combined, reduced, and by which metrics / weights would one do it? Say each country in Scandinavia made a report. How would one group and condense these into a Scandinavian report? The wire is great, but obviously it has a perspective from the U.S. Yeah, I'm American, sorry. Would be tremendously cool to compile multiple ones. You know, like SCU, insert the ISO country code. Yes, that is a great question. How do I make the wire? Oh, good grief. It's a lot more haphazard than you might want to think it is. The wire reports for every 3 minutes of narration. They take me about 4 to 5 hours to make. So it's not exactly it's a very time intensive task, right? I really probably should do a video on this, how I make the wire. They are the sum of my collective insanity. That's really how I make the wire. All of it is basically just what I think. I should do a video on that, though, because it's really hard. And people always ask me, well, what sources do you use for the wire? Oh, good grief. Good grief. It's a valid question. It's a valid question. However, I don't have a good answer for you because I get... a lot of information from just random sources, and sources which would probably not appreciate, you know, their username being out there, I'm sure. Basically Twitter, Telegram, stuff like that. It's just a collective insanity that I create for the day. But I will say this. Since I can't, or I can, but since I haven't found a good way to list the sources for every wire report, it would be too long to put it in the report, and I'm fairly certain I'll get a lot of people banned if I put out that, you know, I used their, you know, information in a wire report. Since I can't do that right now, I do not put anything in the wire report that can't be found with Google. So if I do put something, and you'll see the wording change drastically, if I do put something in the wire report that has a very obscure source, or it's like very hard to find or something like that, I'll put it in there. But most of the time, if you see something in the wire and you're like, really, is that true? Google it and you'll find it, because that's the answer when it comes to the wire reports. I'm not going to hide any of this information. And you know, when I use the obscure sources, people just really do not like that. People want to hear mainstream news, and that's where most of the wire stuff comes from, mainstream news. Like, at least the indicators, you know, the details of me, like, drilling down to find out what the mainstream media is lying about, that takes a lot of time. But most of the time, yeah, it's not going to be anything hidden for sure. So, yeah, I'll have to probably drill down and do that a little bit better. Let's see here. Spooky asks, I have a pretty good grasp on local comms for situational awareness, local emergency, and ham freaks and a scanner. Okay, good. But despite owning a couple shortwaves, not sure how I would employ these in an emergency other than randomly scanning. Okay. Don't really understand those bands either. Okay. Important freaks by U.S. geographical area reception zone times of day and what I could realistically pick up, absent an outdoor antenna, are probably all knowledge gaps for me. Fair enough. Okay. Not looking to become a ham, but basically to have some intel capability during a power or internet outage. All right. Okay, that's good. That's what this is for. That's, you know, I hate to say, like, this is the answer. It's not. I mean, it's the answer we have now. It's a slipshod, hastily put together plan. Basically, you can do exactly what I'm doing over here. Listen only to JSA call and see what you can get. In terms of people that are not affiliated with me, right, not the GhostNet, not stuff like that, shortwave radio does have uses. Unfortunately, shortwave radio, like broadcasting in terms of like commercial broadcasting, has really gone downhill over the past few years. Shortwave radio is like the 4chan of the internet, you know, or of the radio world, excuse me. It uses some really weird stuff on HF radio. So, there's a lot of weird stuff on HF radio. Go down to 80 meters, go down to the 80 meter band and just scan around and listen. And some of the weirdest programming I've ever heard is on HF radio. I'm not going to say nothing super useful, but there aren't, you get the voices of certain countries. So if you want to listen to China's state sponsored news, they have a programming for that. They have Voice of America, programming for, you know, shortwave radio. Every big nation pretty much has their own like state sponsored news that they push over shortwave radio. A lot of times it's in other languages, but there's a lot of English stuff too. If that's what you want to use, it's pretty handy. Really, I can't say, there's not a whole lot of good programming though in terms of like what's out there. Now, the reason that you might want to keep a shortwave receiver on hand is for like a doomsday scenario, right? Where internet's down, TV's down, everything's down. Well, with a shortwave receiver, let me see, do I have mine here? Finally found it. Here it is. Just have something in my hand literally before I started this and just found it. So something like a simple, you know, GP7 SSB. This is the newer one with the rechargeable internal battery. There's a million of these kinds of things on the internet. This is probably one of the most capable, yet still the cheapest. It's not cheap, though, but not what I would consider to be cheap. You know, this may be a hefty investment. You know, if you're hesitant to spend money on, like, a Baofeng that's, like, $30 to $50, depending on which one you get, then you're probably going to balk at this or any other shortwave radio. This is just a receiver, and because you're going to get it, this is what's going to happen. You're going to get it, and you're going to turn it on, you're going to scan, and you're going to hear a bunch of weird stuff, and you're going to say, this was a waste of money. Well, it's not really a waste of money in the long run, because this is more of a doomsday preparedness thing. What I'm trying to do with the GhostNet, though, is make it so that if you bought one of these, and you have a shortwave radio, you will get some kind of use out of it. So, I hope that, you know, the work I've done here with the GhostNet will be able to encourage more people to kind of, you know, start seeing the uses for shortwave
and kind of using this a little bit more. But for now, we're still getting started, right? So if you have a shortwave receiver, don't throw it away. Keep it around. It's pretty good to keep for now. It may not be super useful at the moment, but I think that it will in due time once there's more commercial stuff on shortwave radio. I'm not aware of any projects, though, I think it'll be probably the amateurs that start adding more use to radio. Radio has exploded in popularity, especially on HF radio, the harder side of radio. It's exploded in just the past few years, you know. So this, you may have buyer's remorse when you buy a shortwave receiver, which is why I've been hesitant to say, you must need this. You don't. You can get by with something cheaper. An SDR you plug into a computer is probably better in every way anyway. But this is more of kind of like a doomsday end of the world kind of thing. Yeah, there's uses for these, and I may have a video. I may decide to do a video for people that seem to have these or some kind of shortwave thing, and they're like, "Man, I spent like $100-something on something that's useless, right?" Well, it's not. I mean, it's not useless entirely, but yeah, I need to do more on that. So, all right, what have we got here on the GhostNet? Somebody just did something. I can see it on. They're really close, or they must be exactly between these two receivers because it's the equal strength over here. It's the same SNR. No, it's not. It's close. What are they doing? Some kind of message because somebody sent an acknowledgement. I don't know what that is. Somebody on here on my antenna is talking about. We're talking about the radios. Got FLDigi and JS8 going. Need more monitors. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we all do, don't we? All right, so yeah. All right, let's see. Let's move on here. Let's go answer some more questions. I hope this is not super boring for you guys. Like, I mean, I feel like a crazy... You know, I've been... How long have I been doing these videos for? Like 5 years now? 4 or 5 years? Something like that? Seems longer. 2 or 3 years. I've been going 2 or 3 years pretty strong, I think, since COVID. But I still feel like a crazy person talking to myself a lot of the times. Let's see here. Okay. Pitchfork Operators Union. All right, nice. Is there a COTS drone commercial off the shelf, just a thing you could buy, that I can buy that won't go out of its way to blow my cover? Bonus points if you can program a flight plan and send it off on to get some images and come back with radios totally off. Good question. I'm not a drone guy. I have a couple of drones, but they're just DJI, so most intensive spy drones you can get. I would say, generally speaking, because, well, Ukraine and the whole drone war thing with Ukraine has really, it's really gotten people thinking about this sort of thing. I would suggest look into building your own because then you're going to know what's on it. You're going to be able to look at the software. You're going to be able to look at all this, and you might be able to do it for cheaper. If you're just getting into drones, you know, DJI may be an option. I would go with the smaller ones, though, that don't have the ID broadcast, though, because some of the bigger ones have that, and it's like, unless you're using it to, like, videotape weddings or do some photography stuff or something, like, this is not good. So some of the more sketchy Chinese-made drones, you know, may have some features like that. But yeah, I don't have any models to mine, so I'm sorry if I can't help you out a lot. But I know that do-it-yourself options are kind of preferred a lot of the time when it comes to drones these days. So let's see here. Moving on. Okay, Andrew has a question. Simple question, what is the cheapest radio to get involved in GhostNet? I'm currently looking at an RTL SDR, but the setup won't really allow me to actively participate. Okay, yes. UK-based, if that has any impact on the question. It doesn't. Finally, love your vids. Appreciate the wire. Keep it up. All right, thank you. Appreciate that. If you're looking to transmit, okay, if you're looking to receive, there's a bunch of different options. But if you're looking to transmit, let me see. Do I have one? Yes, I have one. This is about the cheapest you can do, right here. The True SDX.
I haven't done any videos on this yet, but this is about, in the United States, it's about $130 straight from China. You can get it in the UK. I got this off of Amazon, and there are a lot of clones on AliExpress and so on and so forth. Now, something that you need to be aware of, there's a little bit of controversy with this radio with the clones. So just be advised, if you want to update the firmware for this device, you need the serial number for it. And the serial number for mine, I threw away in the packaging. So no firmware updates for me. I have to basically just completely reflash everything and maybe somehow get it to work. Now it works for me, but I don't mean to say this, how do I say this diplomatically? I don't mean to hurt anybody's feelings, but the developers of this have got the firmware locked down. So the developers of this are looking to have a little bit of control over it after it's been sold to you. So, you know, I'm sure that's... you know, just all on me, you know, it's maybe my fault for not like kind of understanding that, but this is a really great radio. I just want to say this is a great radio. It does several bands. It's probably the cheapest HF radio transceiver you can get. It's just that the whole put your call sign in to download firmware thing is kind of rubbing me the wrong way, but that's of course just my own problem. But anyway, this is probably the cheapest you can do in terms of being able to transmit. Now, you're going to need a little bit more than this. You need the battery. You need a battery thing. You need an antenna system, which is probably going to run more expensive than this, depending on your experience and whatnot. But yeah, check out the TrueX SDX. I'm trying to think. Is there a cheaper one? The Zygo G90. If you're willing to spend about $400, $450. Zygo G90 is a really good option. I don't have one yet. I'm getting ready to order one, but everyone seems to be perfectly fine with it. You can use this without a DigiRig. I'm trying to get mine to work with a DigiRig, and it's given me a little bit of an issue. But this should be able to function with a USB sound card. It's not the greatest way to do it. If you're wanting to be like super prim and proper with radio, it's not a great option to use with a USB sound card interface. You can do it, you absolutely can, but I prefer to use a DigiRig as much as I can. It's just a cleaner, more professional, less noisy way of doing it. So TrueSDX, that's probably the cheapest you can do. This readily available, so I think it's still readily available in the UK actually too. So Mr. Wojak here. Is Baofeng pronounced Boofwang or Baofeng? It's definitely Boofwang. I've been wrong. I've been lying all these years. It is absolutely Boofwang. Boofwang. That's it. GIF or JIF? Well, do you want the real answer? You're not going to like the real answer. Well, since the G... doesn't the G stand for graphics? Doesn't that make it GIF like we all have been pronouncing it for so long? Yeah, something like that. Okay. Let's see here. John says, all right, it's interesting to me that many young folks seem genuinely interested in comms/radio as a tool for tactical or in prepper situations. However, if you go to any local radio club, gathering, or just get on the air, you'll find very few young folks. How do we get them on the air? They're already on the air. That's my guess, is they're probably already on the air. You're just not seeing them. They're not going to clubs because they get shut out. They get shut out of clubs really quickly. Ham radio clubs are still not... I mean, I don't want to... Oh, man. How many hams do I want to offend today? Let me see. I think I'll be nice. A lot of ham clubs are just not where the cool kids are going these days. They're not interested in participating in the ham radio hobby. They're interested in having, results. Right? They're not interested in radio theory. They just want to talk to someone, and they're more interested in stuff like that. You want to get more kids? You want to get more young guys? You want to get more young guys in radio? Here's what you do. If you have a ham radio club, do something other than ham radio. Do something like orienteering. Set up an orienteering course. You know, get your local ham radio club, set it up, do an orienteering course. Medical, get somebody to come in and teach a first aid course or a CPR course. Get everybody on your ham group CPR certified. Do something like that. Adopt a highway. Do that. Go pick up trash on the highway. Do something other than radio. Get outdoors, you know. Try to show how radio can be used as a tool. And you're going to have a lot of pushback. Like, it's easier just to start a new ham radio club most of the time than it is to actually, like, go with a pre-existing club most of the time. Because I have not found a single club. I mean, granted, okay, this is just me. Just me. Don't throw things at me. I have not found a single ham radio club that I feel, like, welcome at, for one. But they're just not interested in the things I'm interested in. So I'm willing to go, of course, more than halfway. I'm not just meeting people halfway. I'm going like 90% of the way here. And I get nothing from clubs a lot of times. It's changing, okay? It's changing a lot, but it's an uphill battle. It's definitely an uphill battle. So if you want to get the younger guys involved, you're going to have to do something other than radio or show how radio can be used for something other than just talking with other hams about what radio you're using. Because that's like 90% of ham radio traffic right there. It's hams getting on the airwaves and talking about the specific radio they're using or other more delicate things. And yeah, that's a problem if you want to expand and grow and develop and things like that. All right, let's see here. Radio Research Group. All right, awesome. We were thinking of doing a simple ghost net receiver setup video, like the cheapest SDR setup you can use to pick it up. Yeah, go for it. The cheapest SDR setup. I still think, you know, going for the absolute cheapest is you're running up against diminishing returns a lot of the time, you know. I still think the RTL SDR is probably the best, your best shot. RTL SDR V3. I think the V4 is coming out. Man, I need to get one of those. The V4 is supposed to have better receive on the HF bands instead of having to go to this sort of weird backdoor cheat kind of mode. The biggest problem with radio, well, with the SDR setup, is the antenna. That's where people are gonna run into some problems. So the antenna is gonna be your hardest part for most people. It's an easy problem to solve if you're a ham. It's an easy problem to solve, so I need to do a video on that. Let's see here. See, Sebastian asks, okay, how do you format research, etc., for the wire? Okay, as a doc, I only get told the info, but I never put it together. I was wondering because I want to use them for my military science fiction I'm writing. Nice. Hopefully I kind of answered that one for you already. It is just a collective insanity that's going on up in here. It doesn't have to make a whole lot of sense. Is there a military publication on intelligence report writing? There is one on report writing, but I don't think it was helpful. I have to look into that. Download the military publication for intelligence analysis. They just did a recent one. That's really good. The Marine Corps. Marine Corps has probably got the best publications of anybody. They have one on intelligence analysis, and they have one on intelligence preparation of the battle space. Spoiler alert, if you learn and read about intelligence preparation of the battle space, you may find that that's a very useful skill to have. Very useful. And a lot of people are charging an awful lot of money for someone who can be able to do that. So, yeah, IPB, intelligence preparation of the battle space. It goes by other names too, but once you get into it, you'll realize what's going on. So, let's see here. Let me do a quick check. Yeah, I got some people banging around on JS8 call. Not super active tonight. I was hoping it would be. But, you know, again, wanted this to be a little bit more organic. Now that I've recorded this, you guys are going to know the cat's out of the bag. I may be doing this more often. Anywho, yeah, so always, you never know who's watching. You never know who's watching, so. Okay, Nathan. Is this a question or comment? I'm not sure. EMP protection for devices to ensure redundant comms can actually be redundant. Okay. EMP. Electromagnetic pulse. EMP stuff. I've gone full circle on EMP stuff. I went and thought, all right, this is probably one of the bigger concerns. And then I realized it's not really that much of a concern. And then it came back around and now it's kind of a concern again. And now it's sort of like not becoming a concern for me anymore. Bottom line is EMP stuff is pretty important to prepare for, but maybe not in the ways that you think. Now, I'm not a scientist. Who's that guy that does the EMP stuff? I forget. Hang on. Let me look him up right quick. Oh, okay, here he is. The EMP doctor, right? Dr. Arthur Bradley. He's got a YouTube channel. Go check out his stuff. And that'll give you a lot more good information on how much of an EMP risk there is for you. For me, let me see here. Let me show you. Good grief, what have I got here? All right. So I do have, Faraday bags and things like that. Where's my other one? A better one. Ah, here it is. This one's got a clear thing on it so you can see the screen of a device through it. I keep my my GPS in this one, just kind of my end of the world GPS kind of thing. I'm not really super concerned about it because it turns out for most modern consumer electronics, they're going to be okay unless there is an EMP so strong that it just kind of wipes out all human life sort of thing. That's not really how it works. Sorry if that's kind of confusing, but if you want to get one or two of these, it probably doesn't hurt. This is one of those things where it's like, do the risk management. Check out the risk management matrix if you haven't already. I did a video on risk management. It's one of those things where, how likely is it? Exceptionally unlikely. But if it does happen, how severe can it be? Well, people tend to think, they're looking at that 5x5 chart, they think, all right, how bad can it be? Okay, well, how likely is it to happen? 1. On a scale of 1 to 5. 1. Not very likely. And what's the damage that could happen if it were to happen? Well, they think 5. It's not really a 5, I don't think. I think it's maybe a 3 or 4. You might find some electronics are taken out. I think Dr. Arthur Bradley would probably agree that surge protectors are probably your best shot. So surge protectors help quite a lot. And that's something that can help you against normal power surges anyway. So check out Dr. Bradley's channel on that. That should help you out quite a lot, I think. Let's see here. Thomas asks, I'm wanting to run a trunk radio scanner with the RTL-SDR V4. And I was wondering if you have a video on that or have any resources for setting it up. Wanted to get my own little local talk. Awesome. Yes, there is a very poorly made video that I've made on like basic SIGINT. So check out the SIGINT playlist. I've covered this a couple of times. But really, you need to go through and find out what frequencies you want to scan for, because trunking is a little bit more difficult. Maybe I should do a video on that. Should I do a video on that? I think I should. I've already got like 5,000 videos planned. Good grief. Okay, so sorry, Thomas. I don't have a solid answer for you right now. I've got what I've got. Check out the SIGINT playlist, but I need to probably do a more solid video on that because it's not easy. It's not easy to set up trunking, at least not for me. So let's see here. Tequila Kid, nice. List of radio bands in order of importance: FRS, MERS, HAM, etc. Well, there is no order of precedence. They're all different bands for different things. So, I don't think the bands have precedence. I think your pace plan has precedence. So, if you want to use FRS or MERS, whatever, it's going to be in your pace plan, right? So, if you want to use VHF or UHF, that's in your pace plan. I would say that the HF is probably going to be lower down in the precedence. Still very important, but again, HF radio is a strategic resource. It is not a tactical resource. Please don't conflate the two. You know, you're not going to be sitting there getting shot at, you know, taking cover in a foxhole, and you're going to whip out your IC705, plug it in, string up 60 feet of wire. No, you're not going to do that, right? You're going to be, you know, shouting rather exuberantly into a handset of a radio that's probably got an antenna, you know, that's VHF or UHF. So HF is not really a tactical. It's not at the tactical level. We have strategic, you know, we have tactical, operational, strategic, operational, tactical levels of warfare. And all of these that you mention here are VHF, UHF kind of things. So that's going to be in your pace plan. That's what the precedent is there. Okay. Let's see. Coco. Coco asks, what antenna to listen to the GhostNet from Europe? What antenna if I also want to transmit? Good question. If you want to listen and transmit, I'm tempted to say you probably just need a wire reel antenna. Do I have one of these? I swear I have everything at my fingertips tonight. See, I'm super prepared as usual for these things. I don't think I have one. Hang on. Give me a moment. Aha, it was right in front of my face the entire time. All right. This right here. If you want to receive, get yourself one of these. This is, it doesn't matter. These are all various Chinesey kind of names. This is the Sangin ANT60, ANT-60 antenna. It's a simple wire reel antenna. I think this is probably a knockoff of a knockoff. This is just a simple wire antenna that has a 3.5 millimeter. It's a TRS style, but I think it's just a TR or a TS connector. That's what you can use to plug into something like this, if that's what you're trying to use. So you can't transmit on these. You'll burn it up pretty quickly, as in immediately. But this is about, I don't know, $10. I don't know what it is in the UK, but you can find them everywhere. This is what I would recommend if you're starting with like an SDR, or if you're starting with one of these. If you got a receive only setup, start with that, because this is a solid investment no matter what you do. Because you always need a long random wire antenna, I think, to receive. Always very handy. If you want to transmit, that's a whole other story. You're going to be shelling out a lot of money, probably $100 to $200 for an antenna. And again, that depends on your preference. For me, I prefer in-fed half-wave antennas because, well, they're fed by the end, and that's really efficient for me. So really easy to get them undone in the dark. Usually I try to get my antennas from Chameleon antennas. They're not a sponsor or anything, but they make really good antennas. And if you're going to be spending a lot of money on antennas, you might as well get one that's made by like a professional company. Because I don't know if anybody's noticed or not, there's an awful lot of guys on eBay making like handmade antennas, which is fine, but they're charging exuberant prices for them. So, that's probably what you want to do is go check out Chameleon Antenna and see whether you want to get the resonant route or the tuned route. But if you're just getting started to receive, get yourself one of these nice reel antenna. So, yeah, let's see here. Alright, continuing on here. Let me check on my GhostNet situation here. Let's see. Somebody's checking in from North Central Florida. People are starting to roll in. We're getting close to the window here. So, even though it's daylight savings time and the time window is later in the year now, at least for my time zone, people still kind of, you know, check in at what the old time window was. So, let's see here. Somebody's talking about, all right, they're checking in, but they have no traffic from Northern Maryland or Delaware. All right, cool. Two different guys checking in from Northern Florida. Okay, nice. I'm hearing them all the way up in Pennsylvania on this web SDR. I can hear them here as well. Let's see. Somebody says, all right, checking in. No traffic from Midlands of South Carolina. Okay, good to see. Got quite a few people checking in. All right, that's good to see. Awesome. All right, let's. Chas on Twitter here says, question. I am looking for a good comm to fit inside a motorcycle helmet and possibly wired to FRS near wireless radio. All right, trying not to use Bluetooth, but would like to possibly patch in cellular phone operation. Okay, that's going to be a little hard to do. The Anytone 878 series does Bluetooth. And they have a setup to where you can have like a Bluetooth earpiece, and then you have like a push-to-talk button that you put on your wrist. is I bought that whole system, and it's kind of dodgy, but it does work sometimes. I don't know. It's really hard to say, because the push to talk is linked via Bluetooth to the radio, but the radio is also linked via Bluetooth to a Bluetooth headset. So you can try that. Try that and see if it works. It's just any Bluetooth headset that fits inside a motorcycle helmet will work. With any Tone 878 UV2, I think. Whatever the latest Anytone 878 series is, check that out. That's where you can get a pretty good Bluetooth setup that way. I tried one out running with encryption, and the delay between the push to talk and when you actually you actually transmit it from the radio, it's like a full 2 seconds sometimes. So not super great. But if you're running on regular DMR with no encryption, and probably even analog. I didn't try it with analog. Maybe I should. That'd be a little bit better to use. Let's see. Doc has a question. What is the best of the best and best of the cheap most of us can afford? I guess you're talking about HF radios. Probably. Let's see. If you can transmit, if you have the ability to, if you're licensed, you got the ability to transmit. I don't know what is the best of the best. Okay, well, I'll just give you the front runners. If you're looking for an HF radio, the most common ones right now that people are kind of using that are affiliated with the stuff that I do: Zygu G90, Yaesu FT891, FT818 if you can get it. They're kind of drying up though because they're discontinued, or 817 as well. But the FT891 is pretty good. I think you still need a digi rig with that. Like I said, Zygu G90. Depends what kind of radio what are your needs? That's why I'm really hesitant to give out answers, but you can't go ICOM. The ICOM IC705 is probably the Cadillac of the small QRP radios. It's just like a smaller IC7300. It does kind of the same things, but just with less power. There's a few things it doesn't do, I don't think. But for me, it's pretty good. Way more expensive than I probably should have spent on it. But I like the wireless capability of that. But again, that's like the top of the line. Most people are probably going to be going with the Zygu G90. $400, $450. You can get it for $400 on sale all the time. That's probably what most people are going to probably go with. So, yeah. All right. Matthew says, a note on concealing ants, antennas, I'm guessing, and repeaters might be good. Yeah. Yeah. I have a whole video on spy radio and the things you need to think about when concealing your antenna, because it is a concern for some people. I'm going to do a lot more spy radio stuff. You guys like that? Spy radio stuff? Everybody likes spy stuff. It's really hard. You got to read a lot of books. I can tell you how much money I've spent on books to talk about spy radio stuff, just to get one sentence from the book. Yep, it's like there's my $15 not coming back. So yeah. Okay, let's see here. Let's see. How do you get your information for the wire? Yeah. Pretty common question, isn't it? Social media, Twitter, Telegram, randomness. Usually mainstream media is a pretty good source, because people seem to be okay with mainstream media sources. Despite people saying they hate mainstream media, when I put a story in the wire that isn't on mainstream media, people lose their minds. People are crazy. All right. Let's see. We've got a question from Hi. All right. Hello. Hi. Relatively easy backup comms for my family, mainly wife and I. She doesn't have or want a ham radio license. Considering doing GMRS and putting a repeater up at the house. Yeah, that's probably what you're going to do. I want to learn more about Meshtastic too. Is that a good option? Yes. Yes. Meshtastic is great. People seem to hate Meshtastic because they don't understand what it's used for. And they seem to have, you know, a really, really averse mentality to reading the manual for Meshtastic, because a lot of the cons of Meshtastic just aren't true. Anyway, don't want to start an argument, but yeah, Meshtastic is a good tool. It's really cheap to get into. Things are kind of backlogged because a lot of dudes on YouTube are talking about it, so that always kind of tends to sell out sources, but Meshtastic's really good. Like, I mean, I really do like it. Text only, but voice, I think, is coming. I think voice is coming. It's going to be... it used to be, like, very, very hard to find out if voice would actually work on Meshtastic, but I think they're figuring it out. Technically, it shouldn't be possible, but I think they're going to figure it out. I'm optimistic, but for now, yeah, just the basic Meshtastic use would be good. You're already on the right path. GMRS and put a repeater up. If you want to say super legal, that's the way to do it. Buy the license, GMRS repeater, done. You could do all the same thing though with FRS and GMRS, or excuse me, FRS and MERS. That's kind of sketchy, right? So I don't know if there's a legal way to do that, but technically, I mean, any Baofeng can do that. But yeah, if you're wanting to stay above board, then yeah, GMRS, GMRS repeater, that's probably your best shot. I would say though, when you're looking into, somebody else had a question about that. Where did I see that at? Somebody had a question. Maybe I'll scroll down and find it a little bit later. About line of sight. So make sure you do line of sight analysis to make sure that you're going to be able to, where you're going to be able to communicate. I maybe need to do a whole video on that, line of sight analysis. There's several tools you can use. I'll get into that later. Somebody remind me. I'm talking to myself again. All right, so moving on here, I have another question from PEMDAS. Let's see here. I have always been curious about encryption. Yes. Aren't we all? I think it's generally not legal for hams in most cases in the U.S., but are there any areas that are gray or where it is straight up allowed? Second, are there reasonable solutions to scanning trunked public service comms? Encryption. Yeah, there are plenty of opportunities where it's legal, just not on ham stuff. GMRS, look into that. Look into commercial radio. Look into the commercial radio regulations, and you'll find out a lot more about what is allowed. Encryption is definitely allowed. It's just not allowed for hams on the ham bands. But yeah, it's allowed. Sure. That's why a lot of radios do it. That's why a lot of Chinese and Japanese radio manufacturers, they're trying to double dip. So like the Antitone 878, technically it can do AES 256-bit encryption, but it's a ham radio. Is it? Is it a ham radio? So... it's meant to be a commercial radio that also does ham stuff. So that's where you kind of find that distinction with encryption. So yeah, absolutely. It's allowed on in some circumstances, but just not with hams. That's why hams get all bent out of shape, because hams seem to think that the only radio you can use is a ham radio. But yeah, there are definitely other opportunities for that. So secondly, are there reasonable solutions to scanning trunked public service comms? Yeah, that's where you live. Go to radioreference.com, and you'll find out what's in your area and what you need to scan before you go out and shell out hard-earned money on a scanner or some kind of system like that. Figure out what comms are in your area, because if you live in a city where they're using encrypted stuff, you're not gonna. I mean, even you got to be like KGB level to have the equipment to break that. So yeah. All right, let's see. Rico question: how do I get friends so that I can actually use my radio for more than trying to listen to air traffic control when I'm near an airport? Building community is hard, isn't it? I can say this though, if you don't have any friends, get on HF radio. I'll be there. Ghostnet will be there. If you don't have any don't have anybody to talk to, HF broadens your horizons, broadens the number of people that can hear you. Let's see, Daniel, I have a question. Okay, which radio or way of comms will be best for short and long way range that do not depend on internet and can be used in Denmark for someone who only have $100 per month to spend? Okay. Let's see. Daniel, you are a good candidate for the True SDX. I think it was developed in your neck of the woods, actually. I'm not sure the developer comes from Denmark or maybe the Netherlands. I'm not sure. I can't remember. Anyway, yeah, check this out. The True SDX. Good option for you. Very cheap. Very cheap. Just save up for a month. Get you one of these. Next month, get yourself an antenna. Get yourself some wire. make yourself a resonant antenna on 20 meters or 40 meters, and give that a shot. I think that'll be pretty good for you. You're gonna need a computer though. You can do FT8. If you don't want to do JS8, you can do FT8. There's an Android app for FT8. I think you have to buy it though, but it's not much. But you can get like an OTG cable, plug it right into this, and their work on digital modes with your Android app. So yeah, that's a good option for you. That's about the cheapest way you can get into it that's actually reliable. There are cheaper radios than this, but they're a little sketchy, if you know what I mean. So, all right, somebody just asked for messages. Somebody sending no. Man, for whatever reason, like, my local antenna is doing super well, and like, this one is not getting anywhere from Pennsylvania. Come on, Pennsylvania, you've got to give me something. Normally these web SDRs have really like way better antennas than I do, but for some reason, like this one is not doing super well tonight. I don't know why. Anyway, kind of goes to show, right? This is real. It's organic, you know. It's real, semi-real time. It's not a live stream, but it might as well be, I guess, at least for me. Okay, let's see here. Let's see. Mr. Geek has a question. Thanks for the work you put on the wire reports. I share them with coworkers who aren't on Team Blue but can't filter the propaganda. All right, cool. I'd like to hear about more secure internet comms. Radio is great, but what about when the internet is still up and being restricted? Excellent question, Mr. Geek, from it looks like the great nation of Ireland. How do I say this? Alternative media is probably where you're going to be at. Telegram is really hard to, I don't want to say that. I was going to say it's really hard to censor, but it's not really. I mean, it's Cloudflare and Amazon Web Services, AWS. Man, they can lock down pretty much all human communications, and we can't do a daggum thing about it. How likely is that? Well, unless you're talking about political stuff in the United States, probably not very likely. But yeah, alternative media is probably your best shot. Internet-based comms, it's like every time, you know, like, oh, WhatsApp. WhatsApp was so secure. Everybody used it, from the FBI to Al-Qaeda used WhatsApp. And then it turns out, oh, backdoor. You know, it's like, oh, Signal. Signal's so great. Everybody's on Signal. And then it's like, is it really? I don't know. I'm not that... not that well versed on all the different ways that we're being spied on. I just know that if it's got a 1 or a 0 anywhere involved in it, it's probably being spied on. So if you've got something like, hey, crystal ball time, if you want to say something sensitive that is not socially acceptable, don't say it on the internet. In person, why is it such a hard concept for people to understand? If you got to talk about some sensitive things, don't do it on the internet. Come on, please. It's not that hard. Actually, it is that hard. That's why people ask the question. I don't mean to belittle. Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, I can't just say, well, you know, talk to people in person, but you can say like part of a message online and then like finish the rest of it in person. But if you're talking about like information gathering, well, yeah, that's a lot easier to say. I mean, Twitter is slowly creeping back into censorship, isn't it? On that one topic. Telegram's a little better, but Telegram's got a lot of bad information on it. A lot of people who are pushing fake information on Telegram. But hey, I'd rather have the fake information, discern it for myself, than have somebody censor it. So, yeah, I need to do a video on that, but I need to learn it myself. I'm no expert on this stuff. I'm just fly-by-night operation here. Okay, Mr. Machina, or Machina. I assume it's probably Machina. How soon World War III? Okay. Ha! It's already begun. How long times of survival, U.S. fleet assets and theater operations? What are you talking about? Sorry. Hang on. Let me read this again. How long time of survival, U.S. fleet assets and theater operations? How soon China retake Taiwan? How soon North Korea reunifies South Korea? Oh, okay, this is more of like a Pacific theater kind of question. I don't think the U.S. Navy is going to last very long in a direct knock down, drag out fight with anybody. As evidenced by Yemen, U.S. Navy you know, all credit to them. You know, they can't save unarmed commercial ships from being hit with improvised missiles that are being shot one at a time. China's entire coastal defense like system is to send thousands of anti-ship cruise missiles, thousands per second. That's what China can do. And they train for that. That's their entire military infrastructure is built to take Taiwan back. How soon do they take Taiwan? I don't know. Pay attention to local elections in China, though. Oh, Mr. Jinping has replaced quite a lot of people. I think he just booted their Secretary of the Navy a while back, a few months ago. I thought, oh, that's pretty big. But yeah, watch for his consolidation of power. He's still got a few people I think he's going to replace. But I think China is probably going to try to sleepwalk into this thing more than people think. Maybe not, but I don't know. North Korea reunify South Korea? North Korea, the DPRK, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Yeah, they have given up on reunification, in case you haven't been following that. They've been they destroyed the Arch of Reunification. They've removed all reunification references from all their propaganda websites. And Kim Jong-un came out and has basically said several times, reunification is not on the table anymore. We're just going to continue building our nation the way that it is. So this may be his own legacy. I'm no Korea guy. I'm not a Korea expert. But I think that reunification is off the table for a very, very, very long time. Very long time. Okay, let's see here. Toddly Media asks, another topic that needs covering is power consumption. Yes, yes. Many people don't understand turning volts and amps into watts. Also, yes. Volts times amps equals watts. They don't understand solar charging and its true effectiveness. It's nice to have those flashy systems, but they are also a waste of valuable power. Yeah, absolutely. I've done a couple of videos on energy, energy stuff. And yeah, it takes so much more battery power than you think, doesn't it? Even just running this tablet here, this sucker's getting hot, you know? It takes a lot of power to run things here. So yeah, you need a lot more power than you think you do. And your solar panels are not as efficient as you think they are. I really do like thin film panels, even though they're half the efficiency or something like that. They're half the efficiency on the box, like on the face value. So maybe you have a 10 watt solar panel that's like a thin film panel, like power film. You may have like a 10 watt panel. Well, really you're not even getting a fraction of that out. You may be getting 5 watts on a good day, but they work more hours of the day. So you like, man, I need to like get Excel out and prove this. But I have found that like, because thin film panels work in less direct sunlight, I have found that with a 10 watt panel on a cloudy day, I can get more juice out of that than a monocrystalline panel, which isn't charging anything at all because it's a cloudy day. So you find that the least efficient panel is half the efficiency, but it's actually many more times efficient in the long run because it works under more conditions. Anyway, yeah, I need to bust out my Excel and actually start testing that and like proving it, because my anecdotal evidence does not really help much. So let's see. Pete, Mr. Pete here. Do you see any use for VAR AC and GhostNet? Yeah. Yeah, I already covered that. So, yep. It's getting MCOM features. I did not know that. Store and forward. Actually, no, I did. I did hear about that. Sorry, I forgot about that. Yeah, store and forward. I knew that was coming. That's going to be interesting. That may earn a place in GhostNet. Yeah, I may want to replace, I don't know, I may want to replace WinLink with VAR-AC. That might get more people to use it. Because WinLink, I mean, to be honest, WinLink sucks. Like, I don't like it. I don't like it. It's just the only way to send, like, a longer text message that's in an email format. It's not really an email, and it's not encrypted. But it's really good for sending these longer reports, and you could store, you know, forms and things like that. You make your own forms. But it's not, I just don't like it. Like, it just, I don't know. Using VARA with it makes it an infinitely better experience, because you can send like a whole page of text in like just like a minute. Whereas here on, you know, JS8, it takes me like, depending on what modem I'm using, it could take me like a whole minute to send like two words. So yeah, that might be useful. Okay, let's see. All right, so moving on here. Edward says, okay, I think your channel is great. Cool. My daughters have performed many of the experiments. All right, nice. Cool. I would like some videos showing the use of SDR receivers, like the SDR Play, DX, etc. We use these, so it would be good to show the power of recording a whole band and how to use it. I need to do more SIGINT stuff. And yes, I concur. I do need to do more of that. More of that once I figure out... See, the SIGINT stuff takes a long time to film because there's inevitably some kind of issue, right? Or it's just like not... It's really hard to explain a lot of times, so I have to sit there and think about how am I going to explain this in a way that people will understand it. So, yeah, it just takes a long time to get set up. But I'll get back more on that, sure. All right, moving on. Mr. Douglas. Douglas says, it seems likely that at some point a play will be made to take out or at least control the physical layer to control information flows and stomp out crypto. Yeah, probably. Who is building a means to transact crypto via radio? I don't know. I don't know who's doing that. I have seen some things, but nothing super reliable. I'm not a crypto guy. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I should talk more about crypto. I don't know. I don't know who's doing it via radio. That would probably be helpful. But maybe... I think it may be asking too much. Because there's a lot of dropped characters in radio. So you drop one character, suddenly your money's gone. Your currency is gone. Let's see here. All right. Future Group asks, thinking how to get new radio users started quickly, are there region-specific repeaters, emergency channels, weather, police, fire, all documented somewhere? Yes. So if I have a friend in San Diego that just bought a UV5R, can he just download channels to quickly program his radio? Yes. Go to radioreference.com and click the county that you live in, and there will be a whole list of all the frequencies that you can track and, like... You know, monitor, public service, ham, radio repeaters, all that kind of stuff. It's all there. Radioreference.com. I think it's .com. Yeah, it's .com. Let's see here. Doc has a question. All right, I'm just getting into comms. What radio should I buy is a dumb question. It would be nice if you had a guide for three budgets, rich, poor, and something in between, of some hardware to buy, the skills you'd need, and the time it takes to be proficient. Yeah, I agree. Man, so, you know, which radio to buy? You know, it's a question that people ask because they don't know what they're asking. And engineers oftentimes don't know how to respond to that. But yeah, I can definitely do that. I've been thinking about it for a while, but I need to purchase the radios myself. And that takes some time to get in. And my mentality is, I have a certain ideology when it comes to radio. I am a QRP guy. I prefer low power, small compact rigs. I do like the Manpack stuff, but I'm definitely not a base station guy. So, you know, people who might be wanting to get into base stations, I'm not a good source for you. But yeah, I'll do that. I'll do that. I'll work on it. Oh, yeah. Theophilus has the same question. Can you do a buy this guide? Yeah. Also, more videos on mesh devices. Yeah, I'll do that. Meshtastic definitely needs some more practical content, not just content selling it. I have no sponsors. You guys are my sponsors. That's really it. People who support us on Patreon and Utreon, all that, and you know, there's platforms like that. That's where our funding comes from. I have no coupon code. I have no affiliate link. I have no sponsors. So, yeah, seems like there's not that much content out there these days that isn't sponsored in some way. But anyway, all right. Let's see. Somebody's doing a CQ contest. Come on. Oh, good grief. Come on. You're doing a contest on the GhostNet. Yeah. Whatever. It doesn't really matter. Let's see. It just might clog things up. It looks like nobody's participating. Anyway. Let's see. Mr. Nah has a question. Radio guides, ? I have a cheat sheet for the spouse, how to tune up the NOAA stations, but it's a full page and kind of clunky thing when written for non-radio folks. Discrete antennas for the home. Try not to attract attention. I'm working on things you guys haven't seen yet. So there will be publications on this. Don't worry. Working on it. All right, let's see. Zana Industries asks, so my friend lives in an apartment that is a Faraday cage. No. Is there a way for him to set up a radio there? Yeah, sure. Sure there is. You probably need a tuner, though. You could probably, if you have a window, hopefully you're living in an apartment with a window. A windowless apartment is just basically prison. If you have the ability to fling a wire out a window or attach something to something metal on the building, you might be able to tune up and get on the air that way. Other than that, you might want to look into MagLoop antennas. They are expensive, though, so it's one of those things where you might have to just shell out $500-$600 for a MagLoop, only to find out that it works like marginally better than just trying to use a wire thrown out the window. But if you're in a confined space, you might find the MagLoop has a high enough Q to get a message out through a very restrictive area. Nah again has a question. For limited budget, is a used HF rig better, or is low power and smaller new rig better? Which kind of radio to buy? It depends on what you're trying to use it for. I would say, me personally, I always go for the smaller radios. Smaller QRP kinds of radios. You might find, though, and this is kind of a hint with really anything on like eBay or something, if you find the same radio for sale like a lot on the secondary market, you might think, wait a minute, why are people selling this radio like a lot? You know, something to think about for sure. Also there are a lot of very entrepreneurial people on the eBay machine. People will price gouge you on eBay on radio stuff. They will try to sell you like a 30-year-old radio for what they bought it for, or for more. Like, there was a guy on eBay. I was trying to find a tuner, a small compact tuner, and the dude was selling it for $50 over MSRP. And I could literally go to the company and order it like right now. And he was on eBay selling it used for $50 more than what it cost brand new. So anyway, just be careful with that. When it comes to buying used radio stuff, you can get screwed really easily. Let's see. Freedom Actual has a question. Very interested in Invis Communications. Good. Near vertical incident Skywave. And whether or not there are any truly mobile solutions. Good question. I haven't found one that works yet. Does a truck make a good ground plane for Invis? My experience, no. I haven't been able to get that to work very well. Invis is one of those things where you really gotta test it, because it's almost impossible to determine if you're actually doing it, because a lot of people claim that they're doing Invis, they're getting Invis propagation, and it's really just a ground wave. So you have to be able to compute the time of day and the atmospheric propagation that actually is resulting in you getting Invis, because a lot of times you might find, all right, cool, I think I'm getting Invis propagation. I see a lot of people in my very local area on like 40 meters or something. And then you go and you compute it and you find out, oh, wait a minute, it's impossible for me to use this because the minimum usable frequency was above where I was at. So it was not possible for me to use Invis. So yeah, tough one. I would really like to find a good whip antenna for 40 meters that works on a car or a vehicle or something. You know, that'd be really cool. But I haven't found one that works super well yet. They're always, antennas like that are always compromised. So, all right. Mr. Boomerang here has a question. Mesh Tastic and its use case. Okay. What would be an ideal setup for encrypted mesh tested comms and a contingent or a way to detect tampering or compromise mesh tested net? Nice. Or mesh tested and ATAC plugin how to. I have a whole video on that from a couple years ago. Check that out. It's on like mesh tested and ATAC. It's like, well, decently popular, I guess. It's a little older, but it's still the same thing. And in that video, it shows you how to set it up, but it also has a use case for it. So that's a good answer to your question right there, I think. But I will probably talk more about that later on. Okay, Arc Blaster. Is it possible to get into radio with a cell phone instead of a laptop? Yeah, it depends on what you want to do. There is no good app. I don't think there is any app at all for using JS8 call on like a cell phone. I wish there was, because that would be so cool. But right now there isn't, so you're kind of stuck with tablets, unfortunately. But if you want to do FT8, which is... I don't find it to be very useful for information exchange. For testing, yeah, it's useful, but that's really all you've got. And then if you want to do like more tactical stuff, you can use ATAC and stuff with a cell phone, with a radio. So through the Hammer plugin or through some other stuff, if you want to use like Meshtastic, same thing. Well, not same thing, but you know, same idea. So, you know, that seems like that would work very, very well. Let's see here. All right, Nikolai. Nikolai has, in the list of priorities, where would you put radio in the grand scheme of things? Obviously, food comes first, but are you spending $1,200 on an optic for your DMR or buying and building a new stationary or vehicle mobile long-range radio system? Good question, and I have a whole video that'll be coming out, if it hasn't already come out, on prioritizing radio. So check out the prioritizing radio video when it comes out, if it hasn't already come out. I haven't decided when I'm going to publish these, so that should be a good answer for you. To answer your question more directly, I think it would make a lot of sense to think about radios in terms of the way that we buy guns. It makes a lot of sense to think about radio the same way. Every gun is a tool, so are radios, and they tend to be pretty pricey investment sometimes. So I will let myself do the talking in that other video. But to answer your direct thing, I think that a lot of people a lot of times just say, well, I've got this extra cash laying around, let me buy another gun. Well, if you already have your needs met on defenses, then maybe you might want to start thinking about investing in radio. Because that just makes sense. You know, the gun culture nowadays, I mean, people kind of make fun of it, but still, you know, people spend, you know, thousands of dollars on their 12th AR, you know. So maybe consider consolidating a little bit, just saying. But again, the priority is up to you, the individual user. So, all right, continuing on. Fred asks, what would be a good long-range emergency comms option? I need to reach a little over 400 miles to let my wife know I'm alive and on my way home. Foot mobile would be best, but at least vehicle mobile. All right, if that's what you're looking for, I would suggest maybe looking into not just radio stuff, but maybe looking into a satellite communicator, because that seems like a pretty good use for that. Again, you don't want to ever like totally and completely rely on something that is going to rely on somebody else's infrastructure, like a satellite, right? But if you're looking for a good like middle of the road comms option, and you don't mind a monthly fee, it's not too bad. It's like $12 a month, you know, depending on which one you get. If you don't mind that, then you might want to look into something like that. 400 miles is a long way when it comes to radios, and you haven't given me any indication as to what the terrain's like. So, yeah, if you don't have line of sight, you're going to have a hard time. Meshtastic is out. You can't go that far with Meshtastic. VHF, UHF is out. You're not going to be able to do it that far. Even with a repeater, that's way pushing it. Maybe a repeater network, maybe, but generally speaking, that's a bridge too far. But 400 miles is right there on that skip range, so you're probably, if you're gonna do that, you're probably gonna have to, you know, you could probably do a man pack. depending on the terrain. If you got clear line of sight between the two of you, you could do that, but you're going to need at least a man pack, probably Zygo G90, FT891, something like that, that allows you to push out a lot more power on VHF, UHF. But again, that assumes that you both can see each other. So you need to do the line of sight analysis. Somebody asked about that. I was going to come back to that. I'll probably find it again here in a minute. But do line of sight analysis. You can just Google it, line of sight analysis tool. And like the first one that comes up, I think, is SCADA systems. And it'll allow you to determine between two points, is there anything like a mountaintop or something like that that's kind of blocking your way. If you've got clear line of sight, then you might be able to push it with a decently powerful VHF, UHF option, probably VHF. But 400 miles, man, I think more reliably, you'd probably want to go with HF. 400 miles, you could do like an Invis kind of thing and maybe get a pretty good return on investment there. So yeah, I would look into that. I would look into Invis, near vertical incident skywave. That's just the way that you arrange your antenna. It's not anything special. It's not anything magical. It's just an interesting way of propagating. But really, you're kind of in that sweet spot where you're too far away from most VHF. You're way too far for, I think, UHF. But definitely, you might be able to do it with VHF. You're going to need a lot of power, though. It depends on how high you can get your antenna. You might want to try, I mean, if you've got the space to put up a gigantic antenna, maybe look into GMRS, but you're still limited on power on GMRS, so that's a tough one. I need more specifics to answer that a little bit more intelligently. Yeah, so let's see here. Yeah, sorry I don't have a super great answer for that one. I maybe need to come up with a better answer for that, because that's a tough one. Let's see here. Bruce, long question here. Okay, maybe introduce people new to radio on tuning an antenna and use of a nano VNA. Yes, yeah, definitely. Once these concepts are understood, the sky's the limit with regards to making antennas, which I personally prefer. Yeah, that's good, yeah. Yeah, this is a picture of one I spent many hours to. Yeah, okay, cool. I'm going to talk about antenna builds. Let's see. APRS, yeah. $300 into the project. Yeah, building antennas is a tough one, because it's not super hard to do. It's just hard to understand at first, and it may be a little bit over people's heads when it comes to building them for the first time. So I always try to suggest people to go like buy a pre-made antenna to start with, just to get you out the gate. But when it comes to like HF stuff. But if you want to make one yourself, it's pretty good to, I mean, can't beat a dipole, you know. I just prefer the InFET half-wave system, so. Okay, moving on. Let's see, have you considered being a guest on a space? Yeah, I need to figure out how to do live streams a little bit better. A little bit, do like Twitter spaces. I need to get that set up. It's just really hard to schedule this sort of thing. You guys know how it is. So yeah, plus I'm still, like I said at the beginning, I'm really like torn on how much do I waste you guys' time watching a live stream or just me talking to myself. And I mean, I can answer your questions in real time, I guess, but yeah, I just find that when I watch like live streams, maybe it's just me, like I'm trying to like, you know, try to cut out some of the more, like wasted time sorts of things. But I know, isn't that weird, me talking about being too verbose? Good grief, man, I could talk forever. I just don't, I'm trying to be better at that. I'm trying to like not waste your time so much. All right, so Z Patriot. All right, within the satellite ecosystem, okay, specifically satellite constellations, how can these resources be leveraged and moreover integrated into GhostNet for OSINT and or SIGINT datum and perhaps OTH, over the horizon alternative to HF communication or peer-to-peer? Good question. Okay, so there are some radio satellites out there. I still think they're pretty hard to leverage. I still think it's a bit more, a little bit more involved for your average bear to get into. And I just, when we're talking like the ghost net's supposed to be for the lowest common denominator, well, even then it's pretty advanced, you know. I think that may be a bridge too far for now. But I would like to start looking into that a little bit more. Yeah, so that's a tough one. That's a tough one. I don't know how to leverage satellites into the ghost net just yet. But if I can find a way, I will do it, because I think it's cool. And I think it might be pretty helpful, even though satellites, you know, are not the most reliable thing. Somebody else's wire, you know, all that. Let's see here. Let's see. Ordo. Ordo asks, who owns the airwaves? FCC and Supreme Court has repeatedly ruled on this subject and concluded that no right to broadcast exists. I don't know what you're referencing, but I don't care, because the radios are there. What are they going to do? Jam me? Yeah. You get the picture. You get the picture. There's also a difference between broadcasting and transmitting. Like, you know, broadcasting is not allowed on amateur radio, I don't think. Anyway, it gets sticky into the definitions of what is broadcasting and what is transmitting. But either way, technology is there. Use it. All right, so Toddly Media again has another question. Question, comment, I see a problem in new radio users gaining a false sense of security with all the repeaters available. In a real emergency, those repeaters will no longer exist, leaving them with little contact area. Also, do they have the ability to charge batteries and SHTF? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Your repeater is not going to last very long. One word, Maui. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Repeaters are great in a peacetime situation. Repeaters are not great when they can be struck with a munition or something else in like a war zone. Again, something hams completely don't think about, but yeah, repeaters to me are disposable. Like, yeah, you can set one up for an operation, but take it back down and don't expect for it to stay up forever. You know, like repeaters have a use, they do, but when it comes to like ham clubs and like networks and things like that, no, I'm not relying on that. If it's there, good. If it's not, don't build your whole pace plan around a repeater. Please don't do this. Please do not build your whole pace plan around somebody else's wire. You know, that's just using a cell phone with extra steps, basically. You know, if you're relying on a repeater in an emergency situation, man, that's, you know, probably not the best way of doing things. So another question from Toddly. Let's see. I think you should also discuss the importance of small community groups getting their own cheap farm repeaters that they have complete control over. If it's an emergency situation happen, at least you know your comms are available to you and your group without anyone else interfering. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. This is just what I said. Yeah. If you're looking to GMRS repeaters, look into doing more repeaters for yourself. They even have DMR repeaters now. That you can get for decent. I mean, they're not cheap, but, you know, in terms of the capabilities, you might have to use one of those. I've got one sitting in a box around here somewhere. But yeah, build repeaters you can control. So yeah, scrolling through, that looks like pretty much it. I think I'm out. I think I'm out of questions. I think you guys have tapped me out for today. Let me check here on the GhostNet again. I haven't had a little bit of traffic here on my own radio for a while. Let's see. I have some SNR requests, maybe some heartbeats, perhaps. We'll see. I mean, a few people have been sending messages back and forth. I forgot to mention. Normally, someone picks up the wire and transmits the wire for that day. Normally, I've seen it from a few people. I guess it's probably a little much to expect now that I'm trying to record. Isn't that how it works? Every time you're trying to record something, you're trying to show something out, it doesn't work out. Anyway. Somebody just did a heartbeat somewhere. It'll decode here in a second. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing, you know. It's not perfect, you know. But I think that there's definitely some use there. It'll get better with time. More people will get on it with time. And I think as real world events transpire, we can actually start to see the the use for something like this is a little bit, you know, hard to quantify, you know, if I'm just talking about it. So yeah, I think I will finish out the comm window here. It looks like, I mean, I'm still early. I've been able to get through these questions pretty early. But I will finish checking out this GhostNet session, see who else is out there, see what's going on, do some messages of my own, and I'll probably pack it in and call it a day. Like I said, it's still early, but I found that most people, despite the window starting later due to daylight savings, people still come in pretty early. So some days it's busy, some days it's not, and I think the real benefit to the GhostNet is during world events. You know, the weekly nets are there for people to exchange information and have like a good time to test stuff, because you've got, if there's ever going to be people on GhostNet, it'll be during the window, right? But really the benefit to GhostNet is when there's an international incident or some kind of disaster, a comms outage or something, or spy balloon, whatever. GhostNet, people will be on it and talking about it. So I really do appreciate that, because it allows people who might not have the reach on social media to actually get information out to the world in a way that's not driven by an algorithm. So very cool stuff to see. So again, somebody transmitting an awful lot of information, but somebody checking in from Florida, nothing to report. That's okay. Sometimes it's NSTR, nothing significant to report, NSTR. Sometimes that happens. But yeah, hopefully this has been useful for you guys. I don't really know what else to say. Again, I think I've talked myself to death here tonight. Let me know if you have any other questions. If you've made it this far, you'll know where to drop the questions. Probably just, you know, on Twitter or social media or somewhere. YouTube's probably not the best place to ask questions, because I don't read YouTube comments. I stopped reading YouTube comments on YouTube on my own videos, I think, 3 years ago. So you don't really find anything good in YouTube comments these days. But you guys know how that is. So we'll see about it. I'm going to look into doing some like live streams. But again, I don't want to waste you guys' time if you know, I'm just sitting here, you know, watching JS8 call for minutes and minutes and minutes. It's going to be pretty boring. But anywho, hopefully this has been helpful for some of you. If you have any questions, let me know. You guys know how to find me. You can put comments on this whenever I do something on GhostNet on Twitter. I know that I'm really, really hard to get a hold of nowadays. Because I don't read comments on YouTube. I very, very rarely respond to emails or DMs, just because it's just an overload. First of all, I got an overload of spam. So, you know, my inboxes is full of, are constantly full of spam. And then I found that, you know, as unfortunate as it is, I just find that wading through the cesspool of comments and nasty emails, is to find the one person I can help, is really hard to do. So please forgive me if I'm not able to get to everyone who's got questions. I'll figure something else out one day. But right now, I just can't afford to do it. You know, it's really tough. Hopefully this has helped answer a lot of your questions, and hopefully we can get a lot more questions going. Maybe on some other stuff too. Maybe some other topics, maybe some Intel related stuff. Whatever you guys want. I mean, I'm here to help as best I can. Probably can't help very much, but I'll do what I can. So, I think I'll pack it in. I'll call it a night for the recording at least. So I'll see, you know, some more messages come in. Now, of course, everybody's trying to say something on GhostNet. Now that I'm trying to check out for the night. That's how it goes every time, isn't it? Anyway, we'll see what comes in, and, thanks for watching. Thanks for putting up with me. Thanks for sticking out. So, thank you guys all for watching, and we will see you next time. And as always, fight in the shade.